Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows the only way you'd give a fresh and minted driver a brand new car is if he promises to never drive it. Instead, let him grind the gears and knock over the neighbor's mailbox in something a little more suited to his skill level. And with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, he can safely drive something that's nearly as old as he is. It's not perfect, but it's perfect for him. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
What was your message to the team after?
Keep getting better. It's a process. You know, we're guys are competing. We're playing hard. We're, you know, that's one of the best defensive teams in the league. We scored 110 on them. But we have to get a lot better. That's...
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where the Lakers absolutely cannot wait for Thanksgiving Day so that they can finally eat some turkey and wash the terrible taste of bull from their mouths, which is exactly what they were served tonight. And by bull, I mean a piping hot platter of Chicago bull crap, bull play, and bull calls from the refs. Alan, how are you feeling tonight after the Lakers lost to the Chicago Bulls? Clearly, I'm a little bitter. Lakers lost 110 to 118 to the Chicago Bulls at home tonight. Alan, how are you feeling?
Not a great day. My Packers lost again, damn it. For some reason, the Packers secondary just can't figure it out, and plus half the team is injured. I'm not a Rams fan, but I guess like I want them to win just because it's LA. And Jared Goff lost in his first start. He played okay. It was just a gloomy day. It was raining today for the first time in what feels like 6 months. So, yeah, the Lakers played like bullcrap, like you said.
Yeah, this is one game where I honestly couldn't even hold back how I was feeling. I was just, like, frustrated because I feel like this is a game we should have won. And there were moments in this game where we should have ran away with it almost. And every single time I thought we had a good grasp on this game, Jimmy Butler took over and the Bulls came back and... essentially, that's what happened at the end of the game, too. So it was just really frustrating. This was one we had to have. The fact that Dwayne Wade wasn't playing kind of sucked that we didn't take advantage of that. But yeah, it was just a frustrating night overall for the Lakers. We'll get more into that. But before we do, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes, because the more you rate and review us, the more mini man buns D'Angelo Russell will add to his head. Speaking of which, Alan, what did you think of his new mini man bun / ponytail bun tonight?
You know, it's a pretty clean look, actually.
Yeah.
It's not like all over the place. It's very artistic, I guess you could say. I haven't seen any other players with that style before, so... guess I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah. I actually thought for a second, because the first time I saw it, it showed his side view of it, and I thought he had like two buns, like a Princess Leia thing on either side. And I was like, oh god, no. Thank god it was only at the back. But in case you want D'Angelo Russell to look a little more funny, rate and review us so that he'll add not one, not two, not three, not four, but five, maybe six buns on the back of his head. Just to make it a little interesting. So yeah, with that said, let's get into the game. Like I said, it was frustrating. The Lakers should have won this, I felt like. But they didn't help themselves. The refs kind of turned on them, especially in the first half. And they could never really rebound from the Jimmy Butler explosion of madness. Jimmy Butler tonight had 40 points, 6 assists, 7 rebounds, only one turnover. He shot 14 for 23. And 12 for 14 from the free throw line, and didn't even hit a three-pointer. So they got crushed on that end. Okay, the most annoying part, though, was seeing this Isaiah Cannon fool go off.
Oh my god, dude. So annoying.
That's like the equivalent of seeing probably Jose Calderon go off for the Lakers. Isaiah Cannon had 17 points. He was draining a bunch of threes. He was 3 for 6 from three. And yeah, he's the one who really catapulted them. Get it? catapulted the Bulls in the second half and really helped Jimmy Butler towards the end there, because Rondo wasn't giving them anything offensively, so Isaiah Cannon was essentially their main shooter along with Mirotić, who somehow had 15 points and 15 rebounds. God. So yeah, Alan, what did you think of the game in general, outside of it being frustrating, and what did you see overview wise?
I feel like they weren't really running much of an offense. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they were relying so much on getting out in transition, forcing turnovers, which they did a good job of in the first half. A lot of early offense, just, you know, somebody, ball handler, go around a screen and see what you can do with it. But yeah, there, if you just look like on the weak side, for example, everyone's just standing around, those guys camping out behind the 3-point line, and it was just a lot of one-on-one, yep, isolation ball. I mean, Lou Williams obviously got going. He's really, really hot, and it seemed like the team was just hoping that was going to continue all night. You know,
yeah,
if it did, and Lou Williams had gone for 65 points, then great. But that's kind of the way the team seemed like they were playing. They're just waiting for somebody to take care of all the work. Didn't really play as a connected unit.
Yeah, I would say that's correct. We got a lot of ISO ball, guys trying to find their way, find their offense, find the rhythm, but not so much like a cohesive unit, like you said. That the passing was on display with the bench unit for the second quarter, but outside of that, it was few and far between the rest of the game. And, you know, the good parts of the game, they had that great surge and stretch by the bench in the second quarter. That's when they had great energy. That's when the ball had movement and had energy. The starters kind of replicated that midway through the third as well, and actually did a pretty good job of creating some sort of lead. I think it was like a 6 to 8 point lead somewhere there in the third quarter. But overall, it was just bad defense by the Lakers. They were too uppity, kept biting and jumping at everything, and that led the refs to call stuff, and then from there they just started calling ridiculous fouls because the Lakers were so, they were just biting on everything, and that didn't help the optics of it. So the refs just started calling stuff that wasn't really fouls, but the way the game was going, you know, it just kind of snowballed from there. And there were terrible calls, of course, but the Lakers didn't help themselves with the way they were lunging out at people. And then defensively, they just didn't do a good job of containing those drives that Jimmy Butler had. Every time Jimmy Butler drove the ball, I was like, oh, that's either going to be a foul or he's going to put it in. And that was frustrating to watch. Also, you know, offensive rebounding, like especially in the third, especially in the second half. I think there was that one possession where the Bulls maybe had a good minute on their end of the court because they just kept getting the offensive rebound. They may have maybe had 4 or 5 offensive rebounds in one possession.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Lakers tonight defensively left a lot to be desired. So, yeah, I think that was the tale of the game. And then on the offensive end, you know, because they were just trying to find their shots, because they were trying to jack up 3-pointers, because Jordan Clarkson was struggling to find anything, it just felt like, outside of Lou Will and Larry Nance, the other guys were just struggling to find their shot and missing chippies, missing what wouldn't typically be really easy shots. And, you know, the offense just wasn't clicking. It was very sporadic. And outside of Lou, outside of Larry Nance and some of Uncle P, they just really looked very disconnected tonight. So anything else to add?
Not really. It was, yeah, like you said, it was really sloppy. And sloppy just like my nose right now, because it's running like crazy. Can you excuse me so I can blow my nose real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Thanks, man.
So I will, while Alan blows his nose, I will start with my offensive play of the game. I thought tonight, I had a couple here that I could have put in, but I think I'm going to go with Lou Williams' quick pick and roll to Larry Nance, who looked like he was about to alley-oop throw it in, but instead Larry Nance lob tip passed it to Tarik for the jam. And I thought that was such an exciting play because it showed whizzing, zipping ball movement, and Larry Nance to have the awareness to just tip the ball really quickly to Tarik for the jam was really smart and exciting, and I just love that play overall. It almost reminded me of a Lamar Odom pass because it had the right amount of flash, but also just, it was just a great pass in general. So, Alan, what did you think of that? Yeah. Lou to Nance, Nance lob tip pass.
Dude, that was definitely my play of the game as well. Larry Nance is just so smart. You know, it's like you can tell the game is very slow in his mind. So the fact that he had the presence of mind to do that and have the body control and that literally like the touch off his fingertips and Tarik was right there. That was my offensive play of the game as well. But just to mix it up, the other one was Brandon Ingram's wraparound bounce pass that he had to Larry Nance. Man, that was sick. His handle is really tight, and it's funny. It was like Stretch Armstrong or something. You know, like his arms are so long. Like when we say wraparound pass, his arms are literally able to wrap around the defender and get it there in the pocket. So that was my initial offensive play of the game until Larry Nance did his thing.
Yeah, and you know, that play for Brandon Ingram, he knew what he wanted to do from the start, from the get-go. And he drew two defenders towards him and then did the wrap around behind the back, bounce pass to Larry Nance for the jam. And that was, yeah, that was just as exciting as well. Also, another runner-up would be Jordan Clarkson lobbing it to Larry Nance. All of these feature Larry Nance.
Yep.
Common theme tonight. Larry Nance was everywhere. But yeah, Clarkson pretty much was at the Lakers logo. His foot was on the L, and he just threw an alley-oop to Larry Nance, who reverse spun from Bobby Portis for the jam for the alley-oop. And that was exciting and fun as well.
Bobby you mean Portis, the love right? child of Jordan Clarkson?
Yeah, the love child of Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle, Bobby Portis. So yeah, those were really fun plays. What was your defensive play of the game? You know, there wasn't a lot to look at, but... For me, I guess it would be, this might be a little obvious, but it would be the forced 5-second violation in the fourth quarter where they needed a stop. They got the stop. Unfortunately, on the offensive end, they couldn't really capitalize, but it was a good effort by the Lakers to be scrambling all over the court and disrupting the inbounds pass and getting that 5-second violation. But what about you?
All right, I'm going to go even more off the rails. My defensive play of the game was Luke Walton getting a technical foul, sticking up for Lou Williams not getting the foul call in the paint.
I like that.
He clearly got smacked on the elbow. And I don't think Luke's gotten a T yet this year. So, but he has been sticking up for his players like crazy, which is awesome to see since he's such a laid-back California chill guy. So technical foul, that's my defensive play of the game.
Yeah, I was actually, that's a good choice. And I was actually riled up as well. I was like, yeah, do it, Luke. Do it to him. Like, get mad. You know, I was actually pumped up after that. I was energized. Same. And it's good to see that from Luke Walton, just sticking up for his guys because it was legitimate. Lou Will was not getting his calls. Meanwhile, on the other end, Jimmy Butler, anytime anybody brushes him, he's getting a foul call, you know?
Yeah.
So I was glad that Luke Walton did that. And I think it did affect the momentum because all of a sudden the Lakers started getting those calls. And I think the next play down, they called Taj Gibson for a travel. So, you know, anytime the coach steps up for his team like that, the refs like internalize that and they'll find a way to do like some sort of makeup call. So, so that's a good defensive play by Luke Walton. all right. So let's just get into the rest of the game and some of the players. So who would you say would be your player of the game? I think for me, it's co-MVP between Lou Williams and Larry Nance, who combined for 43 points, and they were 16 for 25 from the field.
Dang.
Amazing, dude. Lou Will had 25 points, 3 assists, 2 steals, 5 for 6 from 3. Larry Nance, 8 for 11 from the field. I think he had like 6 dunks.
Yeah.
And he was also the main guy in all of our offensive plays of the game. 18 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, 0 turnovers. And that's a career high 18 points from Larry Nance in only 25 minutes. Those two guys were amazing. What did you think of Lou Will and or Larry Nance?
Yeah, they're my co-MVPs too. If I had to choose one... Man, it's tough. I was going to say, I'm going to go Lou Williams because he had like 14 points in 3 minutes. Like Stu Lance was like counting as the seconds were going by. So I'm not going to take credit for paying that close attention or anything. But he was ridiculously hot tonight. And yeah, without his scoring punch, we would have been in such a deep hole. However, when I think of the game as a whole, I do think of Nance just being all over the place. Offensively and defensively, all those putback dunks after misses, just being in the right spots. And also he hasn't really been as like much of a presence these last few games. So it was yeah. great to see him tonight come out really strong. I mean, before his concussion, he was really working himself into the games, being involved. Came back and has slowly crept back. And tonight might have been his best, maybe second best game of the season.
Yep, for sure. Larry Nance, like you said, his energy was just very infectious. He had so many different, outside of the alley-oop dunks, he had like a couple of really nice putback dunks that came out of nowhere, and some of them were in traffic, especially the one in the third quarter when Lou Will missed like a baseline jump shot, and Larry Nance came out of nowhere and pretty much
from the opposite side,
he jammed it on Robin Lopez pretty much for the putback, and that was a really athletic play.
That was awesome too, actually, because Chicago is like one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the league. Right. So the fact that he could somehow do his work despite all of that is extremely impressive.
Right. And then he also had another putback dunk against, I think Tarek missed a layup or something, and he came in and jammed it down as well.
Yeah.
So Larry Nance just had a really great game overall. Props to him. He wasn't able to hit a jump shot tonight, but he did take two, and they almost went in. So it's good to see him just continue to explore that facet of his game, and hopefully he continually gains more confidence. He did hit some funky little floaters in the lane, which was nice to see. What else? I did like he had one finish on the baseline in the first half where he absorbed contact and did this sort of like a windmill move with his arms and dropped it in over Felicio, whatever his name is.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a nice finish. And then outside of that, Lou Williams. So, I mean, the amount of points this fool put up in the first 2-3 minutes of his game was incredible. In my notes, I have 8 points in 90 seconds. Oh, 11 points in 2 minutes. Yeah, 14 minutes in 3. 14 points in 3 minutes. Like, it just kept getting more ridiculous and ridiculous as the time went on. And, you know, Lou Will really is the one who brought the Lakers back and extended a lead. I think in the second quarter, we had a good 8-10 point lead, all because of Lou Williams and the amount of pressure he was putting on the Chicago Bulls. So, I mean, he didn't even get to the free throw line that much. He only went 6 times and hit 4 free throws, but he was just hitting a bunch of his crazy leaners, left fades, bank shots. He was crazy from the 3-point line tonight, 5 for 6. He had a bunch of threes. He wasn't even getting foul calls in the first half, but he was still doing it on the offensive end. I really like when he does that hesitation dribble and then all of a sudden darts to the basket and lays it in. You know, it really catches guys off guard because they think he's going to pull up for the J or try and draw a foul, but he immediately just slithers by them. I think slithers is the right verb to use for Lou Will, where all of a sudden you forget how fast this guy is. You know, it's almost Leandro Barbosa-ish, and he's just able to get to the basket really easily and sneakily lay it in. So that's what he did a lot as well tonight. So I was really impressed by Lou Will. And then, of course, he stole the ball a couple times as well. And he always comes from, like, the weak side and sneaks up on people and then just grabs the ball from them really
low. Yeah, everybody forgets about him because he's not known as a defender.
So, you know, Lou Will did pretty much everything you could ask him to do tonight to try and help us win. Unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of people on board with him. Let's see, who else should we talk about here? I thought Julius Randle had a decent game. 14 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. I think the problem with Julius tonight, in spite of the fact that he did shoot 6 for 11, which is a really good percentage, was that I think oftentimes he was trying to go back to old Julius, and him barreling down the lane kind of caught up to him. He got a couple offensive fouls, a couple turnovers off of that, and a couple really whack shots, you know?
He even got away with some. He got lucky.
Right, the one where he had that crazy Shaq dunk, right? He pretty much bulldozed Taj Gibson out of the way, and then he was able to, like, slam it down. I think the refs let him get away with that because we were complaining about the obvious...
Little makeup call.
Yeah, makeup calls. So he had a decent game. He also hit another top-of-the-key jump shot, which was really nice. He also had a really nice pick-and-roll play with D'Angelo Russell in the fourth quarter. But outside of that, it was unspectacular, especially given the games Julius Randle has had in the previous nights where he was almost getting triple-doubles nightly. I think in the Spurs game, he had like 7 rebounds, like 8 assists, something like that, right? So tonight he was a little more subdued, but I think he kind of gave way to what Larry Nance was doing, which is fine. So yeah, what did you think of Julius Randle?
A little disappointed in the rebounding effort. He only had three rebounds tonight. I mean, as a team, shoot, we had... My computer's lagging. We had 37 rebounds as a team, and Chicago had 56. So, yeah, that says it all, right? Offensive rebounds, we had 10, and they had 16. So that's not going to get it done, yeah. And I figure Larry Nance had, like, three or... Let's see, how many offensive rebounds did he have? He had two, but yeah, I was a little disappointed that Julius wasn't rebounding as well. I feel like he was just kind of standing around a lot, which is what most of the team was doing. So that's going to be the theme. It's pretty infectious, I guess. And I, you know, Taj and Lopez are a lot bigger, and you can see when we are playing true centers and. Like a power forward that's 6'11", we do struggle with gaining extra possessions and things like that. So that was a little bit bothersome. And like you said, offensively, he was a little OC tonight, despite shooting 6'11". I didn't see, you know, the drop step. I mean, Taj Gibson's a good defender, and he has so much length. He probably felt the need to contort his body and go kind of crazy again, and it just wasn't working. I did like the mid-range. It looked really good. Just beyond the fact that it went in, the mechanics were there, it was completely in rhythm, zero hesitation whatsoever. Only two assists tonight. He did push the ball a few times. We didn't have many opportunities to even get out in transition. So
yeah, he did have one really nice coast to coast lay in where he got the rebound and just took it himself with lightning speed. So that was good at the start of the third, but. Yeah,
it was crazy. You could see him like accelerate. Like all of a sudden, he just punched the gas. And when he does that, there's no getting in his way. He only had two turnovers, so that's not terrible. But yeah, it was pretty reflective of the entire team's performance, I would say.
Right. So I think one good positive out of this game is the Lakers were able to force 16 turnovers out of Chicago, and I think there was some stat where the amount of points we had off of those turnovers was pretty incredible. It was like 25-plus points off of those turnovers. So that was a positive from the Lakers' end. Unfortunately, I think when it came to the rest of their defense in the half court, it wasn't up to par with the amount of turnovers they were forcing steals-wise and getting out in transition-wise. So... But yeah, outside of Randall, you know, Mozgov started the game off really well. He somehow had four steals, was very active in that respect. He jammed it down. I think he only had 0 points in the Spurs game, right? So he quickly made up for that with a great putback dunk. 4 for 7 from the field, 8 points. We'll kind of leave it there. He wasn't needed the rest of the game, really. Robin Lopez is kind of murdering him, dude. I didn't know how. I mean,
Lopez is, man.
I know both of them, right? Robin Lopez is a little more agile and quick than his other brother, but I didn't know he also had some skill and footwork in there. He was doing some work in the post, and I was like, all right, I guess this guy can do this stuff. He wasn't shooting threes, thank God, but he showed some skill. He showed a jump shot as well. So, you know, Robin Lopez had 12 points, 11 rebounds. And then, of course, Taj Gibson as well. They were kind of a force to reckon with down low. He had 15 points on 7 of 12 shooting. But yeah, Luau Deng hit 2 threes. There's a positive, right? He's been looking better the last two games.
Yep.
As Stu Lance would say, the arc is amazing. His arc is so high.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's not going in, but the arc is good.
The second he lets it go, you just know there's going to be arc there. So it's like, yep, that's a fact.
And yeah, like all joking aside, it is good to see Luau Deng getting that shot down. There was one play where I think it was in the second half where I was just so pissed off at his shot selection. Like, I think I hate how he does this thing where he just holds the ball and then waits for a second, just decides to chuck it up no matter what without looking at who else is on the floor, what else he can do. I'm just like, dude, your shot selection sometimes it's very Meta World PC. I'm like, really?
You think it's just that like he has just a little bit of daylight. There's just a tad bit of space there.
Probably.
He just goes for it.
Yeah, but it's, like, not part of the offense, you know? It's
just, totally.
What are you doing?
And in his entire career, I mean, we recited all of his shooting statistics by distance in the last episode. You know, career, there are certain spots on the floor he just doesn't shoot well from historically. And I feel like those are the ones that he shoots most frequently. We should have looked at the attempts, too. But, Yeah, it is a bit perplexing, but at least he's knocking down the open threes at a higher rate. Yeah. I saw Pete's tweet, Laker Film Room, and he was saying, I totally agreed with him. He's like, oh, I don't feel that uncomfortable when Luol Deng gets a wide open shot now. And I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah, so that's a good positive. Nick Young, you know, he was kind of shaky to start with, but ended up having a decent game overall. 15 points, 5 for 13 from the field, 3 for 8 from 3, had 6 rebounds, 2 assists. I felt like he got gypped a couple times on Jimmy Butler when he was playing some solid defense.
Oh my
but,
God, such good defense on him.
Yeah, but the foul calls were just eating him up, and at a certain point, there's nothing you can do when the other guy is, one, as good as Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler is also getting the benefit of the doubt every single time, and I think that ended up eating away at Nick Young, and his defense kind of slided from there. But I mean, outside of that, he was solid once again. It's too bad he wasn't able to really play his game. But I think Pete Zayas also was noticing that Swaggy P's defense in general has kind of slipped the last few games, which is which is fine. He was playing phenomenal defense, but I still think it's solid overall. So what about D'Angelo Russell? So D'Angelo Russell was out during the Spurs game with a sore knee. So he played again tonight. And it was just pretty much a three-point shooting practice drill for D'Angelo Russell. And he admitted as much, or some of the beat reporters were saying, that D'Angelo Russell really made it a point not to do anything but shoot threes because he didn't want to push his knee. And he actually was supposed to sit out tonight, but he said he wanted to fight through it, and he thought it would be better to just play through the sore knee than just sit, which is admirable. Okay. You know, he also said people play through injuries and ailments all the time, and he wanted to do the same. So that was good. He had 8 points, 3 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 turnovers, 2 steals, was only 3 for 11 from the field, though. He did hit 2 threes, 2 for 9. But yeah, it was kind of disappointing, but when you add in the context, it makes a little bit, makes more sense. You kind of just wish that he shot more mid-range jump shots, because that wouldn't have taken a lot out of him as well, you know?
Right.
Because I get what he's saying in terms of, like, I didn't want to drive it into the lane. Well, he didn't have to go all the way. He hit one mid-range jump shot, I think, in the third or the fourth quarter, where it was the first one he pretty much took. And I was like, I think even Stu was like, oh, there you go, do that.
Yeah.
So right. I think that was frustrating that he wasn't able to mix his game up a little more and maybe even post up or just find guys, put guys in jail in no man's land. So
yep.
I think the one thing he did well tonight was playmake. You know, he really found shots for guys, evidenced by the 7 assists, hit guys, he hit his shooters. Yeah. He got Nick Young one wide open shot on the baseline for 3. He had Julius Randle on a pick and roll. Outside of that, it was a very subpar game from D'Angelo, but I'm not worried, honestly, because I blame it on the knee soreness. I just wish his mentality would have been more to attack in the mid range. And look, the guy only played 22 minutes actually. Yeah. So he didn't even play that much. And he along with Larry Nance, he had the best plus minus. He did have one terrible turnover, which I wish he would cut down on. If he can stop the 2K turnovers where they're unforced, that would be a lot better, because he had that one to Mozgov where he stopped his dribble and pretty much almost gave it to Mozgov right as he was crossing the half court line. And it was just a very easily telegraphed play, and obviously led to a turnover and a bucket on the other end. So what did you think of D'Angelo Russell?
No, yeah, that play was god-awful. I have in my notes boneheaded decisions, like, so many times. And this was, like, right from the get-go. And, you know, it's funny, he only had 2 turnovers tonight. I could have sworn he had more than that. Yeah, like, the timing of his passes, it was off. Or just trying to fit the ball into a space that was too risky. Obviously, the one Mozgov had, you have no idea what he's thinking. Like, just keep dribbling, man. Like, even if he were past half court and he caught it 35 feet away from the basket, what is he going to do exactly? So, man, it'd be really interesting just to ask him, like, what made you do that? Like, what's running through your mind at that point, that you want the ball at the top of the key so something can happen? Because if so, all right, I get it, but you also need to realize who the hell you're passing to. It's not Julius Randle up there. It's not Nick Young. It's your big. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's just a lapse in judgment, and it can happen from time to time, and it's easy for us to say, stop doing stupid things like that. I also wrote down, you know, too many shots from 3, but again, if that was his game plan personally for tonight. It is what it is.
And really most of his three-point attempts outside of the last few desperation ones he were taking were wide open, so I don't blame him that much, but yeah.
For sure. I was trying to look up, I saw it the other day, I went on NBA.com and it was going through all the advanced stats, and I was trying to look up bad passes, and I'm so frustrated because I can't freaking find it right now, and I saw it the other day, but I'd be really curious to see the rate at which he makes bad passes, when they're bad decisions and that sort of thing, because I don't know, I just get the feeling that he'd be, you know, toward the top or bottom half of the league, however you want to look at it, when it comes to that statistic.
Yeah, I think he just needs to lock in mentally and realize that he can't take plays off. He can't lackadaisically, even if he thinks, because sometimes he just puts the foot off the gas pedal and thinks he can make these telegraph passes and doesn't realize the gravity of which, he just doesn't value the possession as much, you know? So I don't even think it's, I don't know. He just has to tweak his head a little bit and be more mentally aware at all times, really. But outside of that, you know, someone asked us this question on Twitter, @Tyler_A_Roland asks, are you guys concerned that it seems like D'Angelo is playing worse than anyone else on the team and he sabotaged our starters? So I think this is a little bit over the top because, one, D'Angelo Russell didn't play against the Spurs, and the game before the Spurs, he had 30 points and, like, you know, 5 assists, hit 7 threes. So, and tonight, I don't think he played worse than everybody else. He only played 22 minutes, and he had the best plus minus out of the any one of the starters, you know? And he did have 7 assists, so he was setting people up in a starting unit that has trouble getting going, you know what I mean? So I don't think he was the worst player. I think people are a little too hard again on D'Angelo Russell and focusing in on his deficiencies, which are god-awful. It's almost like the Julius Randle effect, right? Where the bad stuff Julius Randle does looks very, very bad. Same with D'Angelo Russell. Right. When he does something bad, it looks very, very bad. But if you look at his game as a whole, he's just having a mediocre few games, you know?
Yeah.
The last game before this, he had 30 points. So I think people overreact a little bit too much when it comes to D'Angelo Russell. Has he had a good season? No, it's been very up and down. Has he had a terrible season? No, because he's averaging 16.8 points, 3.4 rebounds, 4.7 assists.
Yeah.
And hitting, you know, almost 2.5 threes a game on 39% shooting from three-point land. Is it annoying that he takes most of his shots from three-point land and hasn't diversified things enough? Yeah, but he's still finding his way. Like I said, the last game he had 32 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals. And I think one thing that I liked from him tonight was he was disrupting passing lanes and getting steals as well. The last three games, he's had 3 steals, 3 steals. Tonight, he had 2 steals. So D'Angelo Russell's doing other stuff out there. It's just when he makes a turnover, it's so apparent. When it looks like he lacks focus, it's so apparent. When it looks like he's mentally checked out, it's apparent, you know? So
yeah,
I think people just need to add a little more context and perspective and then realize that tonight he was coming off a sore knee. Look, if he has another terrible game the next night against Russell Westbrook, then yeah, we can continue to talk about his struggles, but I don't think we should overblow it to the point where he's playing worse than anyone else and he's sabotaging our starters. I get how that can come off, that it may come off looking like that, like he's the problem, but I don't think he's sabotaging our starting unit, if that's what people are getting at. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's a little bit harsh of an evaluation as well. Yeah, I think as far as tonight, playing with that sore knee, he also just might not be used to playing with an injury, you know? I think there's a certain mindset a person has to adopt when they are hurt and they're going to try to play through the pain, whether that's just completely blocking, you know, those symptoms out and realizing that, sure, it hurts right now, but if this thing isn't going to get any worse, I can get through it. It's just my brain telling me, oh, there's something wrong with your body right now, but it's okay, you can get over it. If he isn't used to that at this point, then you can't really blame him for having an off night. What still does bother me is, like, the poor decision-making from passes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't think your knee has a whole lot to do with you having mental lapses. So can't scapegoat him for that part. But as far as the season thus far for him, I guess it's just going to take time. I mean, I'm sorry that that's really cliche, but his ups have been really up, you know, and his downs haven't been like equally as terrible as his great games. You know what I mean? It's not like we're left scratching our heads to the point where we're just completely pissed off at the guy, for lack of a better word. So I don't know. That's not like the deepest analysis, but yeah. I'm not too concerned because shoot, it's the middle of November. It hasn't even been a month yet.
Right.
And it's the point guard in the NBA, you know, as far as Julius, like coming along pretty quickly. I mean, right now, that's what a lot of the fours are doing, is getting up and down, running the floor. And there are so many mismatch problems that, yeah, he's going to look great. And, you know, we're not like killing Jordan Clarkson for struggling with his shot right now, saying that he's a big problem because he can't knock down threes for us. So I do think it's a bit harsh to go at D'Angelo like that, just because number two pick, he's flashy and he has showed us so many good things that we want to see it consistently night after night.
Yeah, I agree with you. And yeah, you know, D'Angelo Russell, like I said, I think he gets a bad rap just because his mistakes are so glaringly sophomoric and rookie-ish that, I mean, almost D-League-ish, his decisions sometimes. And look, he'll have a night where it's two turnovers and that's not bad, right? But those two turnovers are probably the worst turnovers you've ever seen in your life, which makes it look all the more worse. But on a whole, I think, you know, he's still working out the kinks. Like I said, if you're averaging 16.8 points, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists, and people think you're playing terribly, I think that's a good thing because there's nowhere to go but up from here. So if that's his worst, if this is his worst baseline, I'll take it, you know?
Yeah, right.
Speaking of Jordan Clarkson, I think we will kill him for tonight because, my God, I was getting pissed off, man. Look, I felt sorry for him at times because he was just missing chippy shots that were out of his control that he normally makes.
Yeah.
It was kind of a snowball effect. When it rains, it pours, which is funny because it was literally pouring in LA tonight. But that was Jordan Clarkson's game tonight. He had 5 points, 1 for 12, 1 for 3 from three. 3 assists is pretty good, and 0 turnovers. But he had 0 turnovers because I felt like the whole night he was just looking for his shot and just pressing. I could feel the tension in him trying to get a bucket, you know? It was so palpable that I was like, yo, chill out, bro. Like, you don't have to force it so much. And he just was. He was like, I gotta get a bucket. I don't know why I'm not hitting this mid-range jump shot. I don't know why I didn't hit this easy layup, you know? And instead of, I think, focusing on the little things and just trying to get guys going on offense or being a larger part of the offense, it was just Jordan Clarkson on a one-man mission trying to get respectable stats, I felt like. And in the end, he had one of the worst plus-minuses, minus 12. So what do you think of Jordan Clarkson? I feel like he really struggled, and I don't blame him too much, but I wish he hadn't pressed as much as he did tonight. So,
yeah, I definitely agree. He didn't get into the paint very much at all. And that's something that he's been doing a really good job of, is breaking guys off the dribble, first step, penetrating. And whether that turns into a kick out or a floater, a layup, whatever it is, didn't see a whole lot of effort on that end tonight. And I get it, like, Rondo's out there, Butler's out there, they're really good defensively. But again, like you said, he was camping out at the 3-point line, just like a lot of the other guys. So as a committee, they were pretty guilty of it, and it would have been really nice to see him attack the rim, get to the free throw line, just try something different. You know, he had like one mid-range jumper he took, he missed it, and I liked seeing that because it came off of an offensive set. But otherwise, it did seem pretty one-track minded, and even defensively, he had a couple lapses. He gave Denzel Valentine way too much space in a corner three. It was like semi-transition, wasn't closing out on him at all. And it's like, dude, we know this guy can knock down threes. Didn't you see him play in college for 4 years? Yeah. So I'm sure at that point, like, the offense and his struggles were affecting him defensively, which is unacceptable.
Yeah, so, you know, bad night for Jordan Clarkson. Let's flush it down the toilet and rebound, because he's going to be going up against Westbrook next game, and we will definitely need him for that, to channel his inner Westbrook. So, and tonight, like I said, it was just a matter of when he was driving, he was just missing really open floaters and layups that he normally hit, and he just wasn't doing it tonight. Outside of that, let's end with Brandon Ingram here, who had a pretty decent game after what was a struggle, to put it lightly, against the San Antonio Spurs, where he was 1-for-9. Tonight, he had 7 points on 3-for-6 shooting, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. Obviously, he had that really nice wraparound bounce pass to Larry Nance in the first half. He, on offense, he had this really nice post-up on Valentine where he took a turnaround jump shot. He missed it, but he got the offensive rebound and slammed it home immediately. That was nice to see. Outside of that, he also had a nice pull-up jump shot from the top of the key in the second half. And yeah, what did you think of Brandon Ingram's game? I thought he played decently defensively once again. And I like that he rebounded offensively tonight as well. So,
yeah, definitely. He looked pretty comfortable tonight. The one thing he could have done better, he had that one closeout on Mirotić where it looked like he tried to like break his arm, basically, because he jumped so high and he covered so much distance. And normally he's great at closing out shooters, keeps his feet on the ground and just uses his length because he has so much of it. And for whatever reason, he just wanted to pack the crap out of Mirotić. And so that was like the one thing that kind of surprised me, because I haven't seen him do that often this season. But as far as on the offensive end, yeah, I totally agree with you that his shot is coming along a little bit better. It's interesting, and this is a very like technical, mechanical type thing, but when he shoots his jumpers, there isn't much rotation on that ball. Have you noticed that?
Not. Yeah,
there's like no spin, and it reminds me, not mechanically similar, but when Allen Iverson would shoot, there's like no rotation on that thing at all. It was a knuckleball, you know.
Yeah.
It was just floating through the air, and it's interesting to me that's been his tendency so far. I'd almost have to look back at some college tape to see if that's how the ball was coming out of his hand.
No, I actually don't think that that's his normal shot. So when he's shot putting that and it goes in, I pretty much just think he is willing that in, because his natural shot, especially when he has it going, it looks a lot more pure. And I think you've seen it against New Orleans when he hit those turnaround jump shots. That's how his normal jump shot looks like, where it just drops so purely into the basket and softly, instead of just like a shot put,
which it's is like what a clunker
right now. Yeah. And it'll just kind of frozen rope in there with no rotation, because it looks like he's palming the ball in. So no, I remember in Duke, he really gets his fingertips on that, and there's a little more rotation, and it just looks more like a fluid, pure shot. So right now he's still, honestly, whatever shots he's making out of pure luck and will.
Just
and,
like accuracy.
Yeah.
Because if there's no spin on the ball, there's zero forgiveness, right?
Right.
I guess I'm thinking about, like, if I rushed my shot, that's probably what would happen. Mm-hmm. Because I want to get it out of my hand quickly so I don't get blocked or whatever it is. Which means it's not rolling off your fingertips. So
yeah, he's still thinking
that's what's
too
going
much
on
about
with
it.
Him. He's just rushing. Yeah, yep. Yeah.
So he's obviously still not comfortable, but that's a good thing because he's still getting stuff done. He's getting more comfortable playmaking, obviously, which is a good thing. And you just have to hope that his shot comes around and he becomes more comfortable, becomes more aggressive, taking that wide open three. Look, he's shooting only 21% from 3-point line. Yes, that's terrible, but I think that will shore itself up in due time. No need to worry. I just like that he's finding other ways to contribute, obviously. And the other thing is, I'm still so impressed every time he skies for a rebound with both hands, because it looks like they come from the clouds. And yeah, rebounding is a great skill that Brandon Ingram already has. So,
yeah.
Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I'm watching some Duke highlights right now of a lot of wide open threes. And obviously it's a lot closer to the basket, but there's a lot of arc. And like you said, it's very fluid. The timing's there. It's in rhythm. It
looks like a
natural
shooter.
I would love to see some. Yeah, exactly. I would love to see some practice footage of just them scrimmaging, you know, because everybody literally knows exactly what's going on in practice. So guys are going to be comfortable. And I would just like to see that as a comparison to in-game. I don't think it's a fatigue thing that he's already tired this many games into the season, so we could rule that out. It could just be adjustment, speed of the game, and things like that.
Yeah. Well, in the last scrimmage video they showed, I think a couple of days ago, he actually hit the game winner, like a buzzer beater from three. So that was cool to see. But outside of that, you know, I think that'll wrap it up for our post-game recap. The Lakers are now 7-7. It was a frustrating game. I feel like this is one they definitely could have had. Jimmy Butler was objectively very good tonight. That is the mark of a superstar right there. You know, Mirotić got going. Taj Gibson was in the fray. Robin Lopez. Rajon Rondo had 12 assists. So Isaiah Cannon was the most annoying culprit, out of nowhere culprit, who you're like, who? But outside of that, you know, the Lakers kind of beat themselves up in this game as well, just not playing well defensively or not being locked in the entire game, committing bad fouls, and then on offense, kind of going their own way too much instead of trusting the plays and trusting trusting the offense and trusting the movement. So
yeah, have you ever seen a team go like 17 assists to zero turnover ratio and then all of a sudden turn it over like three or four straight times immediately after that?
No, is that what happened
tonight? That's exactly what happened tonight.
Damn, man.
There was a point, because they kept saying, oh man, can you believe there are zero turnovers so far? So I was like, how many assists do we have? Because we were racking them up. We had 17 assists and no turnovers.
Wow.
And right after Bill McDonald said that, I think we had three straight turnovers. It was like two offensive fouls and then a bad pass, and it started kind of going downhill from there.
Freaking so, jinxed us.
I know, dude. Of course he did. I mean, no offense or anything.
But... yeah. Jack in the box, or how does he say it?
No, he says, Jack in the box. And then he goes, get a late night Bugsy meal. So there's my, oh God, it makes me kind of sick saying it. There's my Billy Mac impression.
Makes me sick hearing it.
Yeah, it makes me sick eating late night munchie meals too. Never.
Is it a munchie
one.
Meal? Does he also say foodie snack or
something? I'm making that up.
Foodies.
I hate you with a foodie.
The Andersons got tickets to the game. How'd they get tickets to the game? Oh man. Yeah. So we gotta end this in a good way. So this is how we plan to.
I'm laughing.
I'm laughing too. Yeah. I hope you guys are laughing.
Hey, Jonathan.
What?
When are we gonna see the Bulls next?
We are gonna see the Bulls on November 30th. Where at, yes. Alan? On TV?
No. I mean, I guess we could look at a TV while we are sitting in the United Center.
What? Yes, folks, me and Alan have planned a trip out to Chi-Town, and we're going to go see the Lakers play on the road against the Bulls in the house that Michael Jordan built. That is pretty exciting, actually. Now that I say it that way, I'm like, we're going to get to see the Michael Jordan statue, going to get to tour Chicago for a little bit, but most of all, be able to see our loved purple and gold fam on the road, which I have never been able to do. Have you?
Nope, just against the Clippers in Staples Center. Right. So basically home game.
So now that we lost this one, now I'm like, okay, redemption game. We got to win in Chicago. Because initially I was like, I expected that to be a loss. But now that we had this sour taste in our mouth of having to taste Bull, hopefully when we're there rooting them on, we will win. So
they'll be tasting our bull crap.
Unfortunately, they will probably be facing Dwayne Wade, which should be a tougher test. And that's 3-point shooting Dwayne Wade to you this year, because that guy, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, decided to shoot threes. And what do you know? He can actually hit them. So that'll be a much tougher test than tonight, obviously, because we won't have the home crowd behind us. But Dwayne Wade this year is shooting 38% from three and hitting 1.3 a game. And his last game, he hit 5 threes against the Clippers, 5-for-9. So good luck, guys. If you thought trying to handle Jimmy Butler and get him off the foul line was tough, get ready to face two of those types of players. So, but either way, Alan and I are going to have a lot of fun. We'll probably take tons of pictures and stuff. And so follow us on Twitter, at Lakers Legacy.
Yeah, take some basic pictures in front of the Michael Jordan statue for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Very basic.
In front of the bean. But we'll also take pictures of the arena, what we see. We'll probably go to the arena. Let's just get there early and see.
Oh, my God, dude. I want to get there when the freaking doors open.
Yeah, so that should be a ton of fun. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod to get the down low on all of that stuff. But yeah, before that, the Lakers have to win on Tuesday against OKC. We cannot afford to keep losing because we are right at the edge of 500. 7-7. We play the Golden State Warriors on Wednesday right after the OKC game, and then it's Thanksgiving, and then we play the Warriors again right out of Turkey Day. So
yeah,
going to be a tough stretch. We got to take advantage and capitalize while we can, and then hopefully when we face the Bulls, we will win with me and Alan cheering the guys on. Maybe you'll see us on TV. We'll see. We'll try our best. But
that's right. Yeah.
We're going to have to rebound from this frustrating win tonight, but I hope everybody...
I think they could beat OKC. Yeah.
I think OKC, they could beat OKC,
OKC too. Lost tonight in overtime to Indiana without Paul George.
Well, they've been faltering just because, like we've said at the beginning, it's just been the Westbrook show, and they really don't have anybody else. They have to have like at least Oladipo playing well to even have a shot, you know? So they're a very easy team to scheme for, I think. And I think Luke will do a good job of, you know, kind of like against the Kings, where DeMarcus Cousins is the focal point and the only real force behind that team. I think Luke Walton will be like, all right, I know it's a lot harder to face a point guard barreling through the lane like Westbrook is, but I think Luke will find a way to try and bottle up Westbrook, and then from there, I think the other
just
guys
got to stop their bigs.
Yeah, it's easier to take care of the other guys. So
going to see a lot more Mozgov in that game.
Yeah, against Cantor and Steven Adams for sure.
Yep.
All right, with that said, I think that'll do it for us tonight. Once again, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes, because the more you rate and review us, Alan,
the more love childs of various combinations of Laker players we are going to discover in the NBA, such as Bobby Portis mixed with Clarkson and Randall.
Nice. So please rate and review us on iTunes. For the OKC Thunder game, we'll try and find a love child in one of their players that the Lakers make up somehow. We'll figure it out. But with that said, I think that'll do it for tonight. Thank you for listening. And Alan, I will catch you later. I think we'll have one more podcast before Thanksgiving, but just in case we don't, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We'll say this again if we have one beforehand. So, Alan, I'll catch you later.
All right, man. Happy Turkey Day.
Happy Turkey Day. No bull for Thanksgiving, please. All right. Peace, everybody.
Later.
Still awake, and I'm here recounting all of my mistakes. Hang on my shoulders tonight.
Napa Know How.
The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa Know How, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How!
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.